Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon daily call-in talk show, and that means you. I'm Alan Chartok, although the script says I'm Ray Graff. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. On March 8, 1971, a group of anti-war activists broke into an FBI office in Philadelphia and stole some files. The files exposed aspects of J. Edgar Hoover's top secret surveillance program. They gave them to the Washington Post and sparked one of the nation's largest manhunts. But the culprits were never found, and the burglary remained a mystery for more than 40 years until now. The burglars' identities have been revealed in a new book, The Burglary, The Discovery of J. Edgar Hoover's Secret FBI. Turns out there were a bunch of professors and anti-war activists who stole the files to start a national debate on the merits of surveillance. A debate, by the way, that is still going strong today, fueled more recently by the actions of Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. Today we want your take on that debate. Does Hoover's program of surveillance during the Vietnam War parallel what we're seeing today? Okay, I want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. You can also get in touch with us online. You can see all the ways to do that at wamc.org/voxpop. But I still think the best way to do it is the email way, and just write to us at voxpop@wamc.org. So it's your turn. What do you think? You know, I mean, the question is, there will be those people, and we hear from them all the time, who say these people are traitors to the country and they should be put in jail, or they should be even, well, executed. And then there are others who say these people are heroes because they take their lives in their hands, and they point out the information that we're not getting about what our government is doing in our names. So I want to know what you think. Let's go to Scott in Saugerties. Okay, Scott, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Thanks
for calling.
This has been basically national policy going back to Woodrow Wilson.
Right.
Surveillance and also to deceive the public. And a lot of people don't realize it, but I think that a lot of these laws should be reviewed again. And I do think that these people are heroes for pointing out that our government is doing things contrary to the Constitution.
Yep. What can I tell you? I'm not going to argue with you. I, you know, but there are all of those people who are going to call today. I know we're going to hear from them, and they're going to say, "What are you talking about? You people are a bunch of panty wastes." We're going to have more people, buildings being blown up and stuff, and therefore it's all worth it. How do you answer that?
I think that there should be more openness in government. That's my personal take on it.
Yeah, but what if the intelligence agencies are going to tell you, look, we're on it all the time. We trace these phone calls to the bad guys. We're able to stop these things before they happen. Therefore, you have to take some pain, which is non-openness.
Well, I don't see that making front page news anywhere. I mean, you can remember the House Un-American
HUAC
committees and McCarthy also in the Senate and the communist chair and all this stuff. It's just a bunch of hoo-ha to keep the people subservient to the government.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you for starting us off. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Marcia in Eckerd, where everybody agrees. Okay, Marcia.
I don't think so. Hello, Alan. Very interesting to listen to you, new resident in the area.
Oh, great.
I want to bring up something that's related but unrelated.
Okay.
And just to put it out there, not that I have... evidence, although I do recall reading things about this years ago, and it's went on the back burner of my mind until the whole Kennedy anniversary came up. But I remember that there was a fair amount of speculation and as I recall, a fair amount of pretty good evidence towards the notion that Hoover, who despised both Kennedys, was possibly complicit in the assassinations of both JFK and Robert Kennedy. And we know he was a man of great quirks, shall we say, and you can get into that more or less deeply as you would like. And I mean, it's a well-known fact that there was mutual animosity between he and Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, there's no question. I'll go that far with you. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, this is the first time I've literally heard, maybe this makes me naive, that there is speculation that Hoover had to do with the assassinations.
That it was an inside job. You know, the thing is, I don't have a lot of time with what I do, but I'd love to go in there and dig around when I have some time and see if I could pull up some of that information.
I have a feeling there's some journalists who might have tried that, you know, in the past. This is the great unsolved mystery of all time. So anyway, Marcia, where'd you come from? You say you're a new resident.
Nether regions, all over the
Nether
place.
Regions.
Europe, I mean, most recently from Europe, from the boonies in northern Michigan, the boonies in various places in California, and not the boonies, New York City, a dozen years in New York City. So just...
Well, listen, Marcia, thank you for the call and welcome. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Great to hear you.
Bye. Let's go to John in Massachusetts. John in Massachusetts, you're on.
Hello, Alan.
Hey.
John, nice speaking with you. Hey, a couple things I wanted to mention. I don't know enough about J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI programs of the past, but I do know...
How old are you, John?
Things. I'm 31 years old, And I did quite a bit of work with the U.S. military in Iraq on certain biometric programs.
Yep.
Software programs where basically we would, you know, you'd try to label the Iraqi people with a code, you know, by the measurements of their faces, the distance from the chin to their nose. This is all done through photographs, retinal scans, fingerprinting, stuff like that. It was used in Al-Anbar province. And
To what end, John? To what end?
I'm sorry? It was used for security purposes. I mean, there were cities like Fallujah, which is recently in the news, Ramadi, those areas, the real heavy hotspots where there was high insurgency populations, right? And if you want to control a population of insurgents, you have to be able to identify them. Right? And, of course, as we all know, that's not very easy.
Okay, so these were facial identity programs,
Yeah, sure. And these software programs, they've been in use since 2005, 2006 overseas. And what's alarming about it is when I came home, of course, when I was overseas, it wasn't a big deal. Right? I mean, we're using it to catch bad guys, this is to support democracy and promote freedom. But when I came home, I started noticing certain senators out west, in Arizona, I believe, they wanted to push this biometric scanning and attach it to the Social Security system. It was back page news. And that alarmed me, of course, because, you know, it just seemed like an invasion of my privacy. And they were going to use it as a tool against immigration and illegal immigrants. So, of course, if you didn't have your biometrics in Social Security, you couldn't get a job, et cetera, et cetera. But since then, you know, that was shot down. I don't think that ever made it through Congress. That was never pushed through, of course, and none of us don't, you know, have our biometrics attached to Social Security. But one thing that is alarming, they pushed the program through under another guise. It's called the Hunter Recognition System, and police across the country use it. So if there's an activist who gets arrested or if there's an individual who gets arrested, he gets his mugshot taken, and without even knowing it, you know, his biometrics, all his information are in the file. And this is, you could think of it as an advanced fingerprinting system, and that's all fine and dandy. But what happens down the road, you know, Britain's working on a program called Skynet, where they have cameras that basically can use biometrics to identify people and get people that shouldn't be on the streets off the streets.
Well, it's inevitable, isn't it, John?
Yeah, well, it's kind of scary because it goes far beyond what I think a government's job should be. You know, of course, security is an issue, and it should be taken seriously. But, you know, there shouldn't be the ability,
John, but I'm going to ask you the same question.
Sure.
That I asked before, what is the, you know, I mean, the argument on the other side always is, we're protecting you people. Are they?
I don't think it's possible to protect people 100%. I mean, let's get real.
Okay, but what if it's 98% instead of 54%?
Does that really make you feel more comfortable?
No,
I mean, if
no.
you wanted to live in a fascist society, that's fine. For me, the risk doesn't outweigh... I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think what they're achieving and the amount of resources that are being dumped into these programs are really what governments of today should be more concerned about.
Okay,
you know? I mean, with other issues like global warming and
John, but that's not what we're talking about right now. But,
right.
But what if, you know, first of all, I want you to know I subscribe to what you say. I also subscribe to what TJ from Spring Glen, New York, just wrote us. We have created the very mechanism, an apparatus of oppression. It will inevitably be abused, as we will.
Oh, absolutely. Well, when you put a system like that, exactly. You know, when you put a system like that into place, and if we do promote this system, and when right now it's the hunter recognition system, right? So you have to get arrested first before you're filed into the system and before they can use it against you, which I don't think they are. I mean, there's no Skynet in America that I know of at this time, but who knows?
But what about what about the day that they say, there's a dirty bomb in Times Square? Is it worth it then?
Well, you know, that's a philosophical question.
No,
I personally
isn't.
Don't believe so. You know, I mean, people die all the time. You can't stop everyone from dying. Terrible things are going to happen. The real problem is mentality. You know, it's people's point of view. And if they're willing to die for their point of view, they're going to try to kill people to spread their ideas.
Well, that's right.
Is that okay?
That's
I don't
right.
think so. But I don't think think taking pictures of everyone is going to stop that. You know what I mean?
Okay, John, as I say, I'm sort of with you on this, but I always try to raise the other side of them.
And I agree with you, too.
And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back. So Barry and Bill and Fred and all the rest of you, stay right there.
Support for WAMC goes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting River of Gold, pre-Columbian treasures from Sitio Conti, goldwork from an ancient American society in central Panama. smith.edu/artmuseum for info. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing 24-hour emergency and critical care for dogs and cats every day, including all holidays. VESHDeerfield.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
Okay, we're back on the Vox Pop, and that's me, and it's you. We have a free phone. Love to have you use it. We've got a Barry in Scotia. Okay, Barry, you're on.
Hello. I'd like to just suggest that I think that when we abandon habeas corpus and probable cause, the Fourth Amendment, we are in a trust but don't verify situation, and I think that the government has pretty much departed from the Constitution. Whether it results in dictatorship or something terrible happens to us is not the question. I think the information has already been used to the detriment of democracy.
Okay, so what do you want to do about it?
Well, I've done what I can. I've complained to my representatives.
Yeah.
What else can I do about it?
Well, there's a lot of things that people can do. You know, it's interesting to me, Barry, I don't see the kind of moral outrage that I have seen over other things like Vietnam.
Absolutely correct. But Ellsberg thought when he revealed Pentagon Papers that would change the course of the Vietnam War, and it didn't happen. So that's true. I mean, most Americans are more concerned about getting on with their business or making a living or surviving or making a lot of money.
Or being protected. That's what I'm
saying. Well, I think you're right about that, too. But you raised the question what the other side says. And if you don't know what they've done, how do you know? Every government that takes over says we're doing this is an imminent threat. How do you know there's an imminent threat if you're not given enough information to decide? If the subcommittees that oversee this take the word of the NSA and then feel they can't share it with Congress, Congress knows more than we know, but less than the subcommittees do, and they can't share it with us.
What do you mean? What do you mean less than the subcommittees do?
I mean the oversight committees that are supervising how our money is spent and what is being spent apparently on us, a spy on us, and a very large percentage of the population of Western Europe.
Right. To say nothing, if you think about it, about the courts that are supposed to be overseeing all of this.
The FISA court you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the one that really gets me crazy.
Well, the FISA court, of course, is now making more constitutional law in important areas than is the Supreme Court. But what's more relevant is the FISA court is not actually overseeing most of this because they have already delegated the right to collect information on bulk, which is identical to a fishing expedition, which means you find probable cause after you've got the information, which is exactly what the dictatorships and monarchies.
And we don't even know who they are. That's the thing that really frightens
me.
Well,
why shouldn't that? You know, you're talking about, or we're talking about, Mr. Snowden, and let us say that he has broken the law, and let's see what that implies. First of all, apparently the only danger that he's done is to reveal to the people in Europe and the diplomats, if they didn't know, and to us that we are being spied on. That is his main threat. As far as the actual disclosure, he hasn't endangered anybody. That's how crystal clear, because the newspapers he's revealed to are some of the best newspapers in the English-speaking world. They have revealed only a tiny fraction of it, and they've cleared anything they thought was starting security with our government. So he hasn't endangered anybody himself. If he has, it's the governments and the four or five newspapers that have done the endangering. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think the only threat is that he's revealed to us that we're being spied on with our money. That's the only thing he's done wrong. Why a senator cannot tell us the names of these 14 or 15 judges, why we cannot know how many things they've reviewed and which ones they've turned out. But they've already delegated not only the right to collect bulk, but they've delegated to the NSA the right to go and look at detailed information as well.
Okay. Hey, Barry, we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Okay. 1-800, do you believe that what Barry said is right or wrong? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Billy, or Bill, in Lanesboro. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call, Alan.
Sure.
I just wanted to share a personal note. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, I was involved in the anti-war movement. And my father was working at the GE Ordnance Systems, and he had a secret security clearance.
Uh-huh.
One day he was visited by members of the National Security Council, or the NSA, or one of those abbreviation, you know, no such agencies. And he was told that if I did not stop my political activities, he would lose his security clearance and hence his job. So he swallowed his anger at first, and he said, has he done anything violent? And the answer was no. Has he done anything illegal? And again, the answer was no. He says, basically, so my son is just exercising his First Amendment rights under the Constitution. He says, yes, but this will still reflect on your job. And he said, if he's not doing anything illegal and he's just being, just following his constitutional rights, get out of my office.
And so what happened? Did he? It's a good story.
No, he did not lose his job.
He did not. Well,
he did not lose his job.
But how?
My mother was quite mad at me for a while, but she was very frightened. But he and I were politically almost diametrically opposed. You know, he's a World War II veteran, and I was an anti-war personnel. But when he saw what was going on, he got radicalized rather quickly.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, Bill, it's a great story, and we thank you for telling it to us. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Alan.
Sure, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, let's go to Fred in Ulster County. Okay, Fred, you're on.
How you doing, Alan? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've heard of a program that goes on in England, in Britain, going back to a couple phone calls ago. I can't think of the word at the moment.
Right.
But anyhow, where they were doing eye recognition, you know,
facial recognition,
eyes, all of that kind of thing. And then working in a law school, I come across lots of documents and things like that. And somewhere in the last year, I came across one regarding a program that has been instituted here in the United States having to do with airports. And anyone flying in or out of the United States is already being put into a database based on this eye recognition.
Uh-huh.
And so, I don't know what to say beyond that.
No, but I want you to say something beyond that. Now we know the story, but now what you have to do is tell us what you think of the appropriateness of that. I mean, you know, anybody who's ever gotten on a plane doesn't want to get blown up on that plane, right? I mean, who hasn't thought about something terrible happening while you're on the plane? So is the facial recognition, which obviously the proponents would say is designed to protect us, Is that a bad thing?
I think it's a total. The point is that it can be used anywhere else in your life, sort of.
Can and will. Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and from what I understand, the recognition can reach as far as a mile away, that kind of thing. So it's almost like the same sort of evil as, you know, them wanting to put these little chips in the license plates, you know, which got knocked down, you know, so that they could always track you or your vehicle, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, so
what do you say to all those people who say, now, listen, Fred, what's wrong with doing that kind of thing, the license plate chip and the rest of it, maybe the chip in your head or whatever?
Yeah, right.
If in fact you haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly. So.
Well, what? Yeah. No. How do you answer that?
Well, I think it's definitely an invasion of privacy. You know, it's for one thing, you're not being notified that you're being tracked. So,
yeah. Right.
You know, no habeas corpus, et cetera. And you know, I just wanted to put out there, you know, because you know.
No, it's a very interesting issue. It really is, and it's again.
Yeah.
Goes right to this question of balance. But to me, the most important thing is not knowing. I think that's the point that you make. If we are told, okay, you want to fly on the airplane, you can't be on the enemy's list. Remember that Senator Kennedy was told one day he couldn't fly because the name Kennedy was on the list. I think that was the story.
Are they gonna warn people getting on a plane that there's the possibility that there's somebody there?
Well, they warn you every time they X-ray you. And they make you take your shoes off. And they,
you know.
Yeah.
I think you sort of understand what I'm saying.
And they put
say.
Your hand. They put your their hands all over your body.
Yeah. No. That's not. But what I'm saying is. We have this, you know, the idea that this person is going to, are they going to, like, you know, put up a notice about that flight or shove that flight down?
Okay, you know? let me go back to the original point, because I'm really a lot of sort of, we're sort of meandering, and it's my fault, not yours. And that is, these kids go in with their professors, and they show the American people that the FBI has files on everyone. You know, I've never had the right temperament to write to the FBI. Most people I know and ask for my file, and I can tell you where it is. I can tell you when I was with Pete Seeger when I was 14 years old. I can tell you, I can tell you all that stuff. And people have these FBI files, and apparently these people blew the whistle. It was very important. Along comes Assange, along comes Snowden, and they do the same thing. What do you make of them?
Oh, I'm totally pleased with everything that they've been doing. I'm sure Assange didn't read every piece of material in there. You know, I think it's a shame what has happened to the kid, and that it's being they're being made pawns out of essentially when you know things.
What do you make of other people
are doing sort of like dastardly things? You know?
Well, yeah, well,
like,
true. But what do you make of Obama's reticence to do anything about the NSA spying?
Yeah, well, there are a number of things that I'm having issues with Obama on. But overall, I think he's done a world of good, I think, in general.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely have a number of issues. With many things with him.
So if you're him, what are you thinking? Are you thinking something like, well, you know, if something gets blown up on my watch, it's like Andrew Cuomo closing down the throughway around Buffalo.
Sure.
Why did he do it? Because if somebody slid off the road and if there was a terrible accident, he would be, you know, held responsible, like Lindsay was during his administration for the snow.
Okay, so bring on the gun control, bring on, you know, all of that stuff, right? You know, it's like, there are so many different, you know, how many people are dying just from killing each other in this country every year, and it's if you're going to deal with, you know, you've got to deal with it on a number of levels, I think.
Okay. Hey, Fred, good call, and I thank you so much for staying with me on this. Appreciate it
very
much.
And thank you for having me.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's go to James in Little Falls. Okay, James, your turn. Your turn, James.
Hi. I read that article in the Times this morning about the book you're talking about, and I found it interesting because I had a personal interest in all of that, what happened during war.
Yep. What was the personal interest?
I was a war resister, and I was tried for refusing to fight. And when I went to trial, like 4 years later, they knew stuff about me from 6 years ago before I was even involved in anything.
Yeah.
They kept FBI files for years. And I think the argument about security tends to be a specious argument, because the reason our founding fathers wrote the Bill of Rights is because they understood that any government in power will do anything to keep itself in power. They could, the minute they're given any permission to investigate or do secret stuff, it always expands way beyond anything that it starts out to be. And every government in the world claims they're doing what they're doing for security reasons. And in the end, the world isn't secure anyway.
Yes, but only I feel compelled to always try to give the other side, even though I'm with you on this. But don't you think if you did nothing to protect people, that that bomb might have gone off in Times Square? Although that's a very bad example, because just an alert cop saw some smoke or something. That's how it happened. So is there no halfway? I mean, is it either all or nothing?
I think they should be more open. I think that they should be severely limited. The Bill of Rights is supposed to protect human rights, and the most dangerous thing for human rights is the governments, not individual people that commit terrorist acts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact is that more people are going to be impacted by the NSA programs in this country and across the world than any single terrorist act. You know, I mean, they don't stop the acts anyway. And if they're going to do these kind of things, they should be open about it. There shouldn't be a secret federal court of any kind. There's no constitutional.
Well, I could not agree. I could not agree with you more about that. I think that's the greatest constitutional violation of all. But as you know, there's an old saw, which is the Supreme Court is the Constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is, and they haven't said that. James, I think everybody's listening really wants to know the other side of the story. What happened at your trial?
Funny, it was in 1973 or 74.
Yeah.
And what happened was it was the end of the war, and I got lucky with a real good judge, and the judge said, "I'm not sending another kid to jail." He didn't have any intent. It's a long history.
And where was this, James? Where did this happen?
Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing. So the judge, do you remember how you felt that day?
Well, what happened that day was right after John Mitchell got arrested.
Right.
Attorney General, right?
I remember.
And after they decided, they threw out all his files. So my lawyer said, well, we wanted to expunge all his files. And the U.S. District Attorney came flying across the courtroom. He says, we are not going to do that under any circumstances. So what I remember is that no matter what you do, if you have power, you have a lot more rights than if you don't.
So in other words, you might have gotten off, but those files are still floating around out there.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't get a good, decent job for 20 years.
Really?
Yeah, every time I went for a job, I'd go back for the second interview, and they'd go, you were arrested by the federal government. I said, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even let me work in the post office loading trailers.
Arrested as opposed to acquitted. James?
No. Yeah, it didn't matter whether you arrested. Yeah. You had a file, and they kept the file, yeah. So.
James, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
All right.
Yep. Okay, let's go to Bradley in Richmond, Massachusetts. Okay, Bradley.
Well, we were founded, actually, by being a little bit discouraged with the people that were running us. And there was plenty of files or whatever on the revolutionaries back in the Civil War as well. So there's some positiveness about looking carefully at the governing powers and then questioning them mm-hmm. in a reasonable way, not killing them or anything like that. So I think that's a history of the United States that started back before 1776.
Yeah.
But I really think that the answer is that we ought to start looking for jobs for everybody. Who cares? We won't care if people are looking at us, if everyone's happy working, making money, paying bills, doing, whatever, we would conceptualize as the American dream in the whole world, not just America. Like, for instance, I don't know exactly why terrorists are terrorists and all that, but I'm assuming part of it is economic. I'm sure some of it's religious, but I think a lot more of it's economic. and then religion kind of gets spread into it. I think that as an agent,
so you think the Taliban and Al Qaeda are operating out of economic motivation and not over religious conviction?
I think the Mullahs and whatnot, their interests are a little bit more in power with their own religious beliefs, but they're thriving on people that are economically in a negative, and so it's easier for them to be receptive to more of a radical kind of inspiration than not. But as far as United States, you know, I think most people would agree with most of your callers that Snowden and Manning and the people that snatched the information from the FBI, they're basically sort of on the side of this is going a little bit too far, and we want a little bit, you know, less of the government snooping in their things. But I think really, if anything, if we, you know, look at the weather today, it's, you know, whatever, in different parts of the country, it's really cold. If we can start insulating our houses and new furnaces and new water heaters and solar, and, you know, there's a huge economic boom that we could be, like, tapping into. And right now, because of corporations and or business opportunities, we haven't really fully endorsed that through the government.
Okay, hey, Bradley, I'm so sorry. We're up against the break, and you've made your point, and I appreciate it. I'm not sure I agree with all of it, but I certainly agree if we made things a little bit better for everybody in this country and in the world, we'd be a lot better off. Appreciate your call, Bradley.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back. We're talking about 7 seconds. So if you're on the phone now, and since I see all five phones ringing, one phone is not, 1-800-348-2551. Well, stay there or get on the phone.
Support for WAMC goes to Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life, offering clay classes and gift certificates. MollyCantor.com. The Montessori School of the Berkshires, discovery-based education, working to foster independence and creativity. Programs for toddlers through grade 8, BerkshireMontessori.org. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com.
And we are back thanks to our wonderful Zachary, who's working the controls today, our wonderful Karen, answering the phones, and, you know, everybody does their part, and your part is to be on the phone. Let's go to Pat in Poughkeepsie. Okay, Pat, you're on.
Hello?
Hi, Pat, you're on.
Hey, Alan. I was calling to comment on your, you know, your devil's advocate of what you say to the other side when they say that they're, they're protecting us, and my response is always to people, you know, I really view that it's you know, we the people's job to protect ourselves from the government. And, you know, what they say, you know, what they say about power corrupting and absolute power, this, I don't think there's any clear definition of absolute power than them having, control over the information of every facet of pretty much anyone's life that they want to know about.
Well, I saw the head of the NSA on the 60 Minutes, and he said, oh, we'd never do that. We would never interfere in people's lives and do personal things. You believe them?
No, not even slightly. Because when you look at you know how they're reacting to people like Snowden, or you know if a hacker was able to get information on a senator or something, they would be treated like just as badly as the guys who flew the planes into the towers at 9/11. They'll be treated like terrorists. And that just makes you think, you know, what exactly are they trying to hide? That's my take. Is, you know, they're allowed to do it to us and to our allies across the seas, and they're allowed to do it to anyone they want. But as soon as the people start pushing back against them, we're labeled as terrorists, and we can't be trusted with the information that they have. So I just find that very interesting that it's okay when they do it, but if anybody else tries it, they're evil.
I like what you have to say, Pat. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah. Let's go to Jerry in Schenectady. Okay, Jerry, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Alan. Hey. I kind of agree with what Pat just said. First, I want to say that those who can monitor the communications and actions of others are in a position of advantage over them. I think that's kind of been established, too. Mm-hmm. The surveillance people probably have a tendency to see their own motives in conducting this surveillance as inherently good and beyond question.
Mm-hmm.
There's a basic level of morality that views anything that's in one's own interest as good, while the only bad motives are held by those whose interests are opposed to your own. Having said that, I have to say most of the motivation of the people in surveillance is appropriate and good, probably. Another thought is there's also often a rush to action where a positive objective of doing something can be achieved, but not enough time or effort is put into weighing the positives against the potential or likely negatives of some of these implementations. And do you get that sense too?
I'm sort of with you. I suspect that most of the people who are doing the spying are probably civil servants who, you know, who have a decent view of themselves and of other people. But the potential is wicked.
Right, right. What happens if you get the wrong people in power?
Inevitably you do. That's what J. Edgar Hoover was all about. This mm-hmm. guy was putting tape recorders under Martin Luther King's bed when he was having his trysts. That's disgusting. That is really disgusting.
It is.
And threatening, basically, I don't know whether he ever is explicit enough, but the Kennedys knew what he was capable of. They couldn't get rid of him. The day that he died, it was like when Stalin died, and they called Beria in. I read the Khrushchev, memoir, and they literally had, you know, their people come in and shoot him. Bring him outside. It took a little while, but they got rid of him because he had such Beria, the secret police chief, had so much power. The Congress, of course, who were not courageous in Hoover's time, came along and then they said, okay, from now on, no FBI director can be served for more than, I think, 8 years, whatever it is. They meant it because they knew from experience how bad that thing could be. And, Jerry, I think you make some very good points.
Yeah, well, thank you. But you're bringing up a few individuals. But what if you get a whole government that is, in general, undemocratic? And I think we're starting to see some thinking that maybe democracy is not the best form of government in this country.
And the best, you mean on the part of the people who are doing this? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's probably true. We see it in some of the economic results that, as a former caller said, we see that the corporations are people. We see that one court case after another helps people who would repress voters.
Mm-hmm.
It all sort of adds up.
But how can the general population successfully mount a counter-movement if most of their communications and meetings can be monitored?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, during the Vietnam time, and I'm not going to make heroes out of everybody then, because I think what happened was a lot of people said, I'm not going to go there and get killed. And that motivated a lot of people to hit the streets. Now, we don't see a lot of people hitting the streets here. We saw it in Tiananmen Square, right? We saw it in Moscow, right? And then we saw oppressive brutality come out against them. But here, I think it's more malaise, don't you?
Well, yeah, that's the thing about an all-volunteer army. You know, you say...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that
they're never
going to
do that one again. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are doing it because they need jobs. So.
No, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think the one thing they learned, that the government learned out of Vietnam and the Congress learned, was that when you tell people that they have to put their keisters on the line and get shot, that they're going to go out in the streets. And they said, okay, so we're not going to do that anymore. So
right.
That's when it becomes a volunteer army.
Thank you, Alan.
And now when the volunteer army comes home with all kinds of psychological problems and the rest because they didn't quite know what they were getting into
and turn it
inward, that's another whole story. Hey, Jerry, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Okay. So long.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Harvey is next in Altamont. Hiya, Harvey.
Hi, how you doing?
So far, so good.
All right. Everybody in the country wants security, and that's certainly understandable. The issue becomes the abuse of the security, or the abuse committed by those people who are in charge of the security. I think that one of the things that's missing in the whole discussion is to, it's like a version of the Rockefeller drug laws. You should have severe, severe penalties for people that abuse their government empowerment, like J. Edgar Hoover. You got Nixon and the, you know, using the instruments of government to try to squash the people that were speaking out against him. And this guy Clapper from the NSA, who lied in front of Congress, I mean, you know, he's going to get nothing. No. I think they should have something like a 10 or a 15-year mandatory sentence for people that do this sort of thing.
Well, it is true that a kid walks into a grocery store with a gun, could get 10 years in prison or more. And a guy who goes before the Congress of the United States and they ask him a straight question, do you do this? Do you do this data collection on everybody? And he says no, right? He gets away with lying, because lying to Congress has been used time and again to put people into jail, but not those people.
Right. And on top of that, I mean, what you're doing is you are giving them the power to maintain democracy. I mean, that's it. If they can use their powers to destroy those that who dissent, they're basically, I think the crime of what I'm saying is, the crime is a whole lot worse than somebody knocking over a liquor store.
What do you think about the students and the professor who robbed the FBI files?
Unfortunately, I didn't hear that part of the program.
Well, it's all in the Times this morning and everything else. So now it turns out 42 years later that they fess up that they're the ones who did it. They send the stuff to the Washington Post, who show that how the FBI is abusing our civil liberties. What do you make of that? Because there are a lot of people who called this program, and they're not today, but they have, and said those people are traitors and they should go to jail for life. There have been people in the papers who say they should be killed as a result of this thing. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that it's a great, courageous thing that they did. It's unfortunate the system is such that they had to do it. Guys like Snowden, I mean...
What about all those people? Hey, wait a second, Harvey. What about all those people who are arguing now Snowden should come back and face the music? If he's a civil disobedient, that's fine, but he should go to jail like Gandhi did.
Well, I got mixed feelings about that, because like the people that smeared Valerie Plame and did real damage to the CIA context that we had, there was such an uproar over that. Why didn't they go to jail? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas you've got Snowden and the people that, you know, like going back to Ellsberg and going back to the FBI, the people that put the FBI.
Well, if you were Snowden, would you come back?
No, not until the environment was totally different. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't think it's a crime, but at the same time, it's something that, it's a crime revealing a crime. Let's put it that way. And I think the people that committed the first crime should be doing time. And I think that people like Clapper and so forth, I mean, you get nothing for lying in front of Congress, but the crime is so severe because you're setting this. You're sowing the seeds for a takeover of protesters, because you can smear them. Somebody I've heard wrote a book called Three Felonies a Day. You know, they say that if you're not doing anything wrong, you shouldn't be worried about it. But there are something like 10,000 laws, and if they want to, they will get you for something.
There are those people who say that. Hey, Harvey, I want to let everybody else have a chance. I thank you so much for the good call. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Raphael in Liberty.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just had a response to an earlier call where the person said they're not really sure why terrorists become terrorists.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I think that, unfortunately, it's quite obvious that it is very easy to recruit terrorists these days because of the Western occupation that's going on in their country.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing nothing but murdering their mothers and children and fathers, especially with drone strikes, and, you know, just occupying them for what reason?
So you don't think it's economic, as that was suggested, or do you think it's religious?
You know, I think that the economics is the reason that we're doing it. War is big business. Mm. You know, we're just going in and blowing everyone up so we can continue a war. And unfortunately, most of the terrorism is going on in places like Pakistan, Afghanistan. They're all dying over there and blowing each other up. Mm. It's kind of the same sadness about the ghettos in this country today, where unfortunately, you know, it's sort of a vicious cycle where, you know, they're just killing each other, and we're causing it just for what? Just for big business. So it seems like quite simple to me.
So let me get this right, Raphael. I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. You're saying that the only reason we're there in these places is because of our economic interests. I'm willing to entertain the idea. But there are those people who say that when the 6 o'clock news comes on and you see some woman being shot in the head because she refuses to wear the burqa or the veil, that the United States doesn't or that the UN doesn't have a legitimate purpose to put a stop to that.
Oh, you know, I think that if you look at things like just sort of policy, it's not really, you shouldn't be fighting fire with fire. I mean, I think that there is a certain responsibility to know that these things are going on and to maybe respond a different way.
What about genocide? What about genocide, for example? When we see genocide in an African country, should we or the African, the group of African states come in and do something about it to stop genocide?
Well, you know, I guess it is kind of a touchy subject because that, you know, that seems quite, you know, right to me that, yeah, something like genocide, there should be, you know, there should be a push to stop it. But I don't know, just at the same time, it seems like the fact that it's just driving on and driving on and it's just constantly, you know, you kill, it just, you know, just like how gangs fight, you kill one member, then they go and they kill another one, and that just keeps going back and forth and back and forth.
Well, it's
something that obviously doesn't work.
Only because we only have a few minutes, I want to thank you for calling. We have lots of people on the line. I want to see how many of them I can get in, okay?
All right, thank you very
Thanks
much.
A lot. Right. Let's go to Jeff and Gardner. Jeff, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
I just only had one comment about the idea of keeping records of phone calls in this country.
Yep.
And I just feel like I'm stuck on this one idea that if I was the one that was in charge of keeping the country safe and I found out somebody was like planning a terrorist act or something,
right,
I'd sure like to be able to check who he's been talking to on the phone in last.
Well, that's the argument, all right. That's their argument.
So I was in charge, I would sure like to have that ability.
And what if when it goes over the line, when it's too much, when
Had a lot of intelligent people with like history buffs talking about this subject very intelligently, and when you got people that are abusing powers, like checking on their mates' phone call, their ex's phone calls, ridiculous stuff. I don't know what to do about that, but.
Well, isn't it a matter of balance, Jeff? I mean, isn't it a matter of not having a secret FISA court, but a court that will do its job, that you appoint people to and say, no, this is over the line. You see, I don't think it's either or. I think, people deserve protection. On the other hand, then you get the Hoover syndrome, and that's why the program today.
I think you're deeper into this subject than I am. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Yeah. Well. I'm certainly not the last word on any of this. Let's go to Lisa in Beacon. Lisa.
Hi. I wanted to say, I guess, four things. One, I just wonder if Obama isn't really kind of naive. He did not live through Hoover. He did not live through McCarthy.
Well, he's a student of history.
I don't really think it's the same thing. I don't think it's the same thing.
Okay.
I voted for him. I support him.
Okay.
But I just wonder if he's a little naive. Second of all, I think that technology is going to render dissent, of political dissent of any sort, eventually just impossible, because no matter what you say, they'll be able to look at your records, they'll be able to, obviously, eventually, this intelligence that they're gathering will be used not in the right way. And if you want to say, well, we need to be, secure, everybody says that, let's be safe and let's be secure, well, okay, let's all walk around and we won't have any clothes on and we'll have, barcodes.
Okay, hurry up, Lisa.
And one more thing is, they had intelligence about 9/11. They had intelligence about it.
Yeah, they did.
And what did they do? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yep. Okay, and very quickly, Laura, you got one sentence. Go ahead, Laura, you got one sentence.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I believe that the Hoover problem is exactly the problem. The American people don't want to be discussing this problem 30 years from now because we just heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea is to have a way to expose these things and a safe way to expose these things so that we know about these.
Well, that's Snowden and Assange, right?
Yes. So then what do we do about it? How do we allow someone? But the people are in outrage because we didn't know what was going on. Just mm-hmm. like the tortures that were going on that we didn't know about. We don't want to know about it after. We want it to be put to a vote and let the people decide before you do it.
Okay, Laura, you are the last call today, and I thank you for making it.
And I
appreciate your perspective. Thanks again. Okay. We are about out of time. Support for the Vox Cop comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition Dinotopia, the Fantastical Art of James Gurney, ArkellMuseum.org, and Sherry Vos Salon, I'm so sorry, Sherry Vos Salon and Spa Woodstock, specializing in hair color and cut, skin treatments, bridal parties, and spa services, SherryVosSalon.com, and Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, offering implant dentistry to replace missing teeth, PadulaDDS.com. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WMC.org/Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm either Ray Graff or Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.